is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, March 22nd, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in Montana. Adrian is working from California. How you doing?
Doing well, Buster. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you again. Back-to-back days of getting up early and talking with yesterday it was Carl, today it's Eduardo, getting all the response from the first two games of regular season. But I think the results of the Dodger-Padre games have been a little bit overshadowed. What do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I woke up to try and watch them. Unfortunately,
you don't
think so.
You don't think this story with Tani and Ipe, his translator, that hasn't blown out of the water what the Padres did today?
I work with you, so to me, everything's front and center. So maybe I don't have as good an accuracy as maybe the average listener.
Well, maybe it's because I'm getting phone calls from people around baseball like, can you believe this? Unbelievable. What is this about? All right. So here's the story. Tisha Thompson wrote it, and she's going to join us in a few minutes to talk about this story. The Los Angeles Dodgers interpreter for Shohei Ohtani was fired on Wednesday afternoon after questions surrounding at least $4.5 million in wire transfers sent from Ohtani's bank account to a bookmaking operation set off a series of events. Ipe Mitsuhara, the longtime friend and interpreter for Ohtani, incurred the gambling debts to a Southern California bookmaking operation that is under federal investigation, multiple sources told ESPN. How he came to lose his job started with reporters asking questions about the wire transfer. Initially, a spokesman for Ohtani told ESPN the slugger had transferred the funds to cover Mitsuhara's gambling debt. The spokesman presented Mitsuhara to ESPN for a 90-minute interview Tuesday night, during which Mitsuhara laid out his account in great detail. However, as ESPN prepared to publish the story Wednesday, the spokesman disavowed Mitsuhara's account and said Ohtani's lawyers would issue a statement. And in that statement, it read, "In the course of responding to recent media inquiries, we discovered that Shohei has been the victim of massive theft, and we are turning the matter over to authorities." There's a lot going on here. There was a second interview with Ipe by Tisha, and then after that, he was fired. And we'll be talking, as I said, with Tisha about the story on the podcast today, as well as Eduardo Perez from South Korea, where the Dodgers and Padres played game two of their two games set on Thursday morning Eastern time. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who signed a $325 million deal in the offseason, making him the most expensive pitcher in baseball history, was on the mound for the Dodgers, and he got tattooed.
And that is ripped, and that one is down, and it's going to get all the way to the wall. Bogarts is coming around. Cronenworth to second. Here comes Tatis all the way to third, and a triple for Cronenworth. The night after the glove was a big, big part of the story. Tonight, the bat makes an early statement.
This was in Cronenworth's first game after having the ball bounce through his glove in game one. He went 4-for-4 with four RBI. Yoshinobu allowed five runs in that first inning and then was pulled from the game. Eduardo's got some thoughts on why that went down the way that it did. In the fifth inning, the Dodgers were down 10-6 when Mookie Betts cut into the San Diego lead.
Hitter in a dangerous count. Uh-oh, Mookie left field, and we have liftoff, a home run and a car for Betts, and the Dodgers are just down a couple.
Betts in this game, four hits and six RBI. But later, Manny Machado applied the coup de grace for the Padres.
Manny Machado, exit stage left. Wow, what a blast, a three-run shot. And the Padres have put 15 on the board here in Seoul.
And that would be the final score. Now, after the game, according to the esteemed Chelsea Janes of the Washington Post, the Dodgers public relations staff guarded Ohtani's locker as he changed and then told reporters he would not be speaking. When reporters surrounded his locker asking if he had a second anyway, he walked by and out of the clubhouse saying what the Japanese reporters translated as, "Have a good night." Now, some other notes. The Texas Rangers, in need of a starting pitcher, signed Michael Lorenzen to a $4.5 million deal. For the Cincinnati Reds, we're seeing a brutal finish to their spring training. Infielder Matt McClain is headed for a second opinion on a shoulder problem, and it's apparent he will start the year on the injured list. A big blow. This is after they lost prospect Edwin Arroyo to shoulder surgery. Noelvi Marte suspended for PEDs. And they also lost center fielder TJ Friedel to a broken wrist. Adrian, what else you got?
I also want to show some love to a producer from the pod way back in the day. Maybe our listeners will remember Sarah Abbott. She is working on a pod called Tourney Run. So that will track the March Madness tournament for the women's game. Everyone check that out wherever you get your podcasts.
Tisha Thompson is an investigative reporter for ESPN, and she was the one who wrote this explosive story on Shohei Ohtani and his translator and all the events leading up to the translator being fired yesterday. Tisha, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Happy to be here.
All right. So I'm just going to basically, I think this is super important for context, to ask you to walk through sort of the sequence of events as they went. First off, what were the first, threads that you grabbed onto in pursuing this story, and how did those come about?
We had multiple sources tell us, and I had seen documentation that at least $4.5 million in wire transfers had been sent from a bank account with the name Shohei Ohtani on it to a bookmaking operation in Southern California. And we had sources, multiple sources, tell us that that bookmaking operation is under federal investigation right now by the Central District of California U.S. Attorney's Office. So we wanted to understand, how did Ohtani's name get on wire transfers? I saw two of them, one from September, one from October of 2023, each for $500,000, and they had Shohei Ohtani's name on them.
Okay, and then after that, who did you reach out to, and what kind of responses did you get?
Well, we obviously did a lot of journalism. We talked to a lot of people, and we tried to figure out what was going on. And of course, one of those people that we needed to reach out to was Ohtani. So we reached out to his spokesperson this week, and that spokesperson facilitated an interview with Ipe Matsuhara. And Ipe is, a lot of people call him, but his last name is Matsuhara. He is the interpreter for Ohtani. If you're not familiar with Ohtani, Ipe is almost as famous as Ohtani is. He's seen everywhere. He's not just his interpreter, he's his best friend. People have characterized them as his close, or maybe even closer than brothers. At one point, Matsuhara said that he spent more time with Ohtani than he did with his own wife. So we ended up sitting down and we did a 90-minute interview, roughly 90 minutes, with Matsuhara, who walked us through how over a course of 2 years, starting in 2021, he began to incur gambling debts with this same bookmaker. He confirmed that it was this bookmaker, and that he, by 2023, had gotten so deep into a hole that he says in this first interview that I do with him, which was on Tuesday night on East Coast time, that he went to Ohtani and told him about what had happened. And Ohtani was not happy about it, but offered to pay off his gambling debts. Matsuhara says he then gave Ohtani instructions and watched as Ohtani logged into his computer and began to put the wire transfer information in based on instructions that Matsuhara had been given from the bookmaking operation. Everything then changes less than 15 hours later.
Okay, so walk us through that. You have that conversation with him. I'm assuming you probably had a story fully prepared at that point to go with. And how did this story change? What were the mechanics of that? It's in terms of who reached out to you, who did you reach out to?
So we were very close to putting out our story. We were getting ready to publish when we got a communication from an Ohtani spokesperson, who then sent us a statement from Ohtani's attorneys saying that there had been, and this is a quote, massive theft, and that they were turning it over to authorities. We still, at this moment, as I'm talking to you, do not know who those authorities are. We haven't been given any elaboration on that yet. We started to make a lot of phone calls. We would later come to discover from two sources with knowledge of what happened with Ohtani and who are close to Ohtani that in South Korea, after the season opener of the Dodgers versus the Padres, the team went into a closed meeting and the team's owner stood up and said, there's a story coming. And this is based on what a Dodgers official told me, that Mitsuhara stands up and apologizes and says he has a gambling problem. Another player says, okay, essentially, what's the big deal? Like, okay. Another Dodger official says, well, Ohtani covered the debt. Something to that effect. I wasn't in the meeting. This is based on what I've been told by a Dodger official.
But which would match what you first heard.
Exactly. However, what we later came to find out based on sourcing, two sources close to Ohtani with knowledge of what they say happened next, was Ohtani, as I think a lot of folks know, is not a fluent English speaker. That's why he has an interpreter. This interpreter is in the dugout with him so he can talk to his teammates and he can talk to the coaching staff. So he's not fluent, but he's lived in the United States long enough, according to sources, that he has enough of grasp of English to be like, wait, what? 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 And he walks out of the meeting and he starts to have conversations. Another interpreter is brought in. And that interpreter, according to these two sources close to Ohtani, say that Ohtani began to understand for the first time what the allegations were, had not known about the gambling, and then discovered that the money was missing in his bank account. We, at the same time, were trying to figure out what's going on, obviously make a phone call to Mitsuhara, who initially, when I say what's happening, doesn't give me a lot of information. I then say, Ipe, did you lie to me last night in our interview? And he says, yes. Through a course of questioning and answers, he says Ohtani had no knowledge of the gambling activity and no knowledge of the wire transfers.
In your eyes, what are the greatest contradictions between what you were first told and what you were told in that second conversation?
Who authorized the wire transfers? And when there is an allegation of massive theft, who's committed the massive theft? Those are some big questions that we're trying to get to the bottom of.
Right. And to go from also, you know, my question as a reporter, when I first read your story, okay, how does it evolve from Ipe essentially being presented to you to provide some context on what happened to the next day getting fired, which is what happened after, I'm assuming, after he spoke with you?
We knew in our reporting that what Mitsuhara had said to me was being taken to Ohtani's attorneys. And at the same time, we later came to find out that this meeting happened with the Dodgers. And in a very quick succession of events, we get this statement of massive theft. And we are now trying to figure out, what does that mean?
Okay. What do you know about where they stand with the federal investigation?
Before we published, a spokesperson for Ohtani said that neither Ohtani nor Mitsuhara has been approached by the federal government as part of any kind of federal investigation. We do have multiple sourcing that this probe is happening and that this bookmaker in Southern California, his name is Matthew Boyer, is under investigation. However, Matthew Boyer has not had any charges publicly brought against him. And we are going to continue to follow that federal investigation to see what happens next.
What do we know about a possible investigation by the Dodgers or perhaps Major League Baseball? Because you would assume at some point this is going to fall in a lap and into the lap of Rob Manfred in some form.
Well, we're obviously trying to figure that out as well. We have sourcing that says that MLB in particular, the league office, is really closely following what's coming out of the federal investigation, is wanting to see what the feds have, I think, before they say much publicly. We've also been told there's not a ton of precedent here. You know, unlike drugs or doping, where there are other players who have found themselves in a position where they need to be investigated because of allegations that have been made against them, there's not a lot about sports betting. Obviously, everyone's going to be like, Pete Rose. Yes, Pete Rose. That is one of the biggest of all time. But beyond Pete Rose, there's very, very few cases like this. And there's not a lot of precedent about what the punishment should or would or could be and what kind of investigation it would be. And, you know, sports betting is a very evolving thing right now. It is legal in a growing number of states. At last count, it was like 38 or 40 states. It happened so quick that states legalize it that we have to keep going to the computer to see if another state is added to the tally. But I think it's really, really important, especially for the folks who listen to you, that if you do enjoy sports betting, it is not legal in the state of California. Sports betting is not legal in California. Sports betting is not legal in Texas. So if you're making a sports bet in either of those two states, you need to be asking yourselves a lot of questions. Another thing that I think is really important that I'm just taking away from learning about this world is folks, I think, can and have gotten confused about what is and what is not legal. While sports betting is legal in certain states, even within those states, it has to be with a regulated sports book, something that the government is involved in. And if you are using what people, you know, colloquially call a bookie, you need to ask yourself, is this legal? Even if it's a slick looking website, it could be an offshore website, which is not legal. And if you're getting offered credit without having to put any money up front, you really need to be asking yourself some questions, because regulated sports books require payment up front.
Some follow-ups on this. What do we know about whether or not the betting was done on Major League Baseball, which would obviously be a huge deal?
Now, while a lot has changed over the course of this reporting, one of the things that has not changed is that the bets were not on baseball. I am getting that from beyond Mitsuhara or Ohtani's camp. We have multiple sources saying that this was never on baseball. It was primarily on international soccer. Mitsuhara elaborated and said, yes, it's international soccer. There was also some domestic football and basketball. When I pressed for more, it's NFL, NBA, and college football.
What was reported after the second game of the season was that there were two Dodgers media relations people stationed near Ohtani. No one was allowed to answer questions. Is there any sense yet of if or when Ohtani's going to answer questions about this?
Well, we obviously asked to speak to Ohtani directly. I think a lot of people want to hear from Ohtani. One of the great ironies here is there will be an interpreter involved.
Right. Someone who to this point has not worked with him, as far as we know.
We do know, and please fact check me on this, in the second game, which took place on Thursday morning in the United States, that second game, there is a new interpreter with Ohtani. It's someone that has worked with MLB in the past.
And I was going to ask you this question, too, about I think it's worth just noting about what an important figure he is. You know, what's your sense of how important he is to Major League Baseball, to the Dodgers, to the people who represent him at CAA?
You obviously have a fan base on this podcast that understands baseball and cares about baseball. And I think for baseball fans, it's a duh. He's such a big deal. He is a superstar. People compare him to Babe Ruth. He is the highest paid athlete in North American sports history. $700 million over 10 years is the deal he signed in December with the Dodgers. That just puts him in a stratosphere so much higher than any other Major League Baseball player in the past. But it's not just here in the United States. He is an international superstar. We have had so many inquiries coming from Japan, for instance, that want to know what is going on. Can we give them more details? He's very famous outside of the United States, and he's incredibly famous here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I remember when I covered the Orioles, Cal Ripken was the star of that team, and he also was an incredibly important asset to the organization. That was important to remember. When I covered Derek Jeter with the Yankees, that was the same thing. He was incredibly important as a financial asset to the Yankees. And the same thing with Ohtani here in this situation. All right, Tisha, thanks for your time. I know you're swamped. I know you probably haven't got much sleep, but I appreciate you joining us.
Always. Thank you so much for having me.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Eduardo Perez is an analyst on Sunday Night Baseball. And Eduardo, you had the pleasure of working games one and game two of the 2024 season in Seoul, South Korea, the last two nights. That we're talking to you right after game two. Man, you talking about a lot of runs, huh?
A lot of runs in the second longest game in, since the clock started, Buster. So that just tells you it's not only that, it caught us a little bit by surprise because we thought that pitching was still going to be able to dominate early, but it looks like Yamamoto struggled early on, and you could say the same thing, but it just also showed the muscle and the relentlessness of the Dodgers tonight. So we'll see what happens, but look, everybody won. Baseball won here. Both teams won. They start the season 1-1, and not a bad trip and a great educational trip for all of us and both teams as well and the fans here.
Yeah, and I've got observations, questions about Yamamoto. We'll get to those in a second. But obviously the big story in baseball of the last 24 hours is whole issue with Shohei Ohtani, his interpreter being fired. Look, we just got done talking with Tisha Thompson. Tell me, at the ballpark today, how much did this hang over the pregame over the game?
I think it did a lot. I think, you know, everybody was talking about it. It was a buzz. It was a buzz around a lot of baseball people, and that's the unfortunate part. It did not detract from the game itself, but you have to understand that everybody talks about Ipe being an impact for Shohei Ohtani for so many years. But in the short time during the spring training, and I imagine as soon as Yamamoto signed, Ipe was his translator as well, his interpreter. So he also had a relationship with him. And now all of a sudden, in his first and biggest start in major league career, he doesn't have the voice that he's always heard in his ear constantly. So, yeah, I think it's a big adjustment. And I think it probably impacted the outcome of the game today.
You and I don't know exactly what took place here. We still need information. I do think that inevitably it would be smart for Major League Baseball to launch its own investigation, because otherwise, you know, they're going to be essentially, I think, people saying, what are you doing? Burying your head in the sand. To me, they don't have a choice at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think they have a choice right now at this point. I think they're going to wait and see. It looks like it's a federal issue. And then from there, they're going to decide. But like Major League Baseball has always handled this internally with their independent observations. But I think it's just too early to tell. I think there's a lot of information that we don't know. And all that we can know is what was written from our people, and then we're going to take it from there. But right now, I think this was a major impact, and it was a lot of noise. We didn't see any of the front office personnel of the Dodgers, a lot of them here. So it was really interesting to see how this is going to continue to develop as the days go on.
All right, Yamamoto tonight did not last past the first inning, threw a ton of pitches, got whacked around. What was your read?
My read was that there was not a lot of confidence early on. Bogaerts swung at the first pitch, got that base hit, hit it hard, 105 miles per hour. And then after that, it was like he was a little tentative with the fastball. Did not have command of the curveball, did not have command of the splitter at all. And the only pitch he really did have command was the cutter, and just did not throw pitches with conviction. But I think it has to do also with nervousness of him out there. Look, he's human, and he was in an environment. He's wearing number 18. Daisuke Matsuzaka was in attendance. Uehara was in attendance. You got Shohei's in attendance. You had the greats. The only one that was missing, I think, was Hideo Nomo. But besides that, everybody else that was one of the biggest pitchers from that he grew up watching were here watching him. And unfortunately for him and the Dodgers, 43 pitches later, he's out of the game after one inning.
And this is after a rough spring. And you and I talked a little bit about this during spring training. I mentioned to you that I'd gotten feedback from different teams where they felt like, yeah, Yamamoto's a good pitcher, but they thought that there were going to be adjustments to make. And I'm wondering early on, you know what, with that delivery, is that going to be something that he's going to have to adjust? Because I mentioned to you before, Eduardo, when I first saw him, I'm like, man, that step and throw delivery that he has, simplified to help him deal with base runners stealing against him, that is something that hitters see 100 times a day in batting practice. And a big part of the effectiveness of starting pitchers, or any pitchers, are the deception in their delivery. And there's no deception there to me, but I didn't play, you did. What do you think about that?
I think major leaguers are special athletes that can make adjustments, and especially guys when it comes to a challenge like Yamamoto. And I think, yeah, I think that has to do a little bit with it. I think another thing that he even acknowledged as well was that he was that he had made adjustments because maybe he was tipping his pitches as well, so his glove positioning was different. And I think when you change your glove position, you also change the way you deliver the pitch. And I'm wondering if he's not comfortable with it right now. He's listening to many people telling him that he is tipping or not, but I think he's got to get to who he has been the entire time and throwing pitches with conviction. I think that's one of the most important things. He's got to believe in himself. And tonight, it did not look like he was making his pitches with conviction, and you could tell with the body language a little bit. As soon as that inning ended, he looked back to the board to see to try to read something, and I don't think he caught it in time, and I think that kept him off guard a little bit. But 43 pitches in your first inning in the big leagues, man, that's a tough way to go, and this is going to be a long flight back to LA for him.
Yeah, and just two missed swings among those 43 pitches. And you know, here's the good thing. He's such a phenomenal athlete that you would assume whatever adjustments he's going to have to make that – you know, he'll be on it, and he potentially could make it. But, yeah, I reached out during the course of this game to a starting pitcher in the big leagues, had a lot of years. You know him. I'm not going to use his name, but I asked him from his perspective, what did he think? And he talked about the deception, you know, and not and that is something where maybe in Japan last year with this delivery, he could bully hitters. Pretty hard to do that in the big leagues, Eduardo. Like, velocity does not scare anybody.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't scare anyone, Buster. Look, the Dodgers are committed 12 years to this guy. And you know, that's something that you have to definitely take into account. And I'm hoping that they understand that adjustments will be made throughout his career. But I am shocked early on because, yes, in spring training did struggle over an ADRA, that they were already making adjustments before he had even thrown his first pitch. Look, jury's still going to be out on was this a great sign or not. But right now, it's time to regroup, a time to get back to the basics, and they're going to need him in a major way.
All right, all we can do is work off of our first impressions. And my first impression of the Dodgers is the infield they have now is not going to be the infield that they have when they reach October. I think defensively some challenges there. What's your read on that after a couple games?
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We had conversations with Dave Roberts, and it seems like with left-handed pitching, they will be making adjustments. Most likely, Kiker Hernandez could be seeing some action at third base. He could be seeing some action in center field as well with Outman and Muncy. They might be rotating here and there. But I think it comes down to that you can't give away outs. And we saw it yesterday with the Padres. They gave away outs, and it was an unfortunate error by Cronenworth with the mishap with the glove. But today you keep giving outs, you keep rolling the lineup over, and eventually it's going to haunt you. And I could see immediately that a point of contact, Max wasn't reading the ball well off the bat, and because he wasn't, it just looked very uncomfortable. But that's not a surprise, because during the spring training, he also struggled with the glove. So we're going to find out. He's got to play defense. I mean, you got an everyday DH in Shohei Ohtani. There's no other options. And Dodgers, they're a great offense, but we've seen what happens with great offenses. If you give away outs, the other big league team will outscore you.
First impressions of the Padres from these two games.
I think they're going to be as good as Jake Cronenworth can be from the three spot. Fernando Tatis has to hit. Manny Machado has to hit. But Jake Cronenworth in that three spot, it's an interesting call right now. And he came through. He came through in a big way tonight. And that's what they need. You can see the adjustments that he made during the offseason. He's hitting the ball more the other way. He's fouling off tough pitches that he was not last year. He was swinging through them. And I love where the bat plane is right now compared to this time last season or even through the midseason of last year.
All right. When we saw the Padres last year, there was all this stuff swirling about dysfunction, and this guy didn't like this guy. This guy didn't like this guy. From afar, you're around them and I'm not. They felt a little bit more gritty gutty to me than some of that stuff that was going on last year. What do you think?
I agree. And I think they're going to be exciting. I think Jackson Merrill's an exciting young prospect. I like him a lot. I love him a lot. And it's not only the swing, it's the way he ran the bases as well. And I think, sometimes you need that young, hungry, talented person to come out there and just inject a little bit of enthusiasm. And I think Jackson Merrill can do that. I don't expect him to be in the nine hole for too long with this lineup.
Eduardo, thanks for doing this. Man, great job from over there over these last couple days.
Thanks, Buster. Appreciate you.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 team preview. Milwaukee Brewers, machinations.
It was a winter of enormous change for the Brewers. The offseason began with them losing manager Craig Counsell to the rival Cubs. Ace pitcher Corbin Burnes was traded to the Orioles a year from reaching free agency. Brandon Woodruff had major shoulder surgery. Mark Canha was traded to the Tigers. Devin Williams injured his back in spring training. He could miss 2 or 3 months. And Pat Murphy takes over as manager. The Brewers also signed Reese Hoskins to a 2-year deal.
The weakest link.
The Brewers' rotation has been at the root of Milwaukee's competitiveness in recent years. Last year, these starters finished 6th in the big leagues in ERA. Now this group is a question mark. Instead of the big three of Burnes, Woodruff, and Freddy Peralta, Peralta must now lead the group that includes Wade Miley, Colin Ray, Joe Ross, maybe D.L. Hall.
A guy to watch.
Rookie Jackson Churio is getting a lot of attention after signing a long-term deal in the offseason. But William Contreras is a foundation player already and is in conversation for the best catcher in the majors. Last year, he had an adjusted OPS plus of 125 with 38 doubles, 17 homers, among 158 hits in 141 games.
Win projection.
Hembo says the Brewers will win 78 games. Sarah Langs checks in with a projection of 79. Bakota pegs the Milwaukee win total at 78.5. I'm going way under 73, because if the Brewers struggle early, the bet here is that the organization that traded Josh Hader while in first place will execute a major sell-off of players like shortstop Willy Adames. Bill Schroeder is the analyst on the Brewers television network. Bill, how you doing?
Outstanding, Buster. Appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you joining us, because the Brewers a lot better than I do. And you've been around them this spring. I'm curious, this is, of course, the first spring training with Pat Murphy as manager of the team after years of Craig Counsell at the helm. Not to compare and contrast, but how would you, look at Pat Murphy and how he runs a team in relation to how Craig ran the team?
Pat's been in baseball for a long, long time. He was an interim manager for San Diego. So he's got his own ideas about how he wants to run this team. I mean, he was with Craig Counsell all the years, the 9 years, and the Brewers have had a lot of success, you know, going to the postseason. I think it's five or six, something like that. But anyway, I think that, you know, Pat's not going to change many things. I think it's going to be pretty much, you know, status quo. He has said he's going to make it his team. He's going to do things the way he feels as though he wants to do them. And he's very appreciative of the opportunity, you know, to manage the team. I mean, you know, the Brewers could have gone a lot of different ways, but I think they decided to stick with the program that Craig Counsell started and, you know, Pat Murphy knows a lot about. So I think it's a good hire for, you know, what this team is going to be this year.
And he reminds me a little bit, you know better than I do, he reminds me a little bit of Dusty Baker, and that it feels like it's hard to find someone who doesn't like him. And it feels like people respond to him, players respond to him.
Yeah, he was kind of the glue in that dugout. I mean, you know, he requires a lot of respect. I mean, the players respect him, but then he knows how to get a smile out of him when he feels like he needs to do that. I mean, he's kind of like a, you know, kind of like being a father. I mean, it's kind of an old cliche, a manager and a coach, like being a father, knowing when to be tough and knowing when to give a guy a pat on the back. And so, you know, Pat's one of those guys that, you know, he's gone up, he's gone through the ranks, and he's earned the opportunity. And he's, you know, and the coaching staff respects him as well. You know, so the Brewers coaching staff hasn't changed a whole lot. I mean, as far as hitting coaches and pitching coaches, they do have a couple of different guys in the mix. But I think Pat's going to be the guy that's going to be pushing all the buttons for sure.
You know, in recent years, it always felt like the Brewers had a big advantage in starting pitching. But major changes. Corbin Burns is traded. Brandon Woodruff, obviously, with the injury situation. Tell me what you are seeing in their rotation this spring.
Well, you know, it's Freddie Peralta. He's going to be the guy. You know, Freddie was a good third starter last year. He made every one of his starts. He was healthy all year, as was, you know, Corbin Burns. You know, starting pitching is going to be something that Matt Arnold's going to have to concentrate on. You know, in the beginning of the year, you only need four starters. It looks like that's going to be, you know, Freddie Peralta, Colin Ray. You know, Wade Miley's got a sore shoulder. He may or may not be ready. You got Jacob Junis, who the Brewers got. He came over from San Francisco. And D.L. Hall. I mean, he was a big name in that Corbin Burns deal with Baltimore. He had a pretty good postseason last year. So he might find himself in that starting rotation. So starting rotation is going to be an interesting thing to watch. Not a whole lot of, you know, household names in that rotation at this point. But, you know, the Brewers, you know, the strength of their team last year, and I think going into spring training this year, is going to be their bullpen. But Devin Williams is out for 3 months. He's got a stress fracture in his back. I mean, you know as well as anybody, every baseball guy knows. I mean, you can have injuries to your bullpen, but if your main guy, your closer is out, that disrupts everything. So it's going to be interesting to see how Pat Murphy and you know, the Brewers navigate through, whether they name a closer, you know, Abner Uribe, young kid, throws 100, or it's going to be matchups in the beginning of the year and see who becomes the closer. We'll see. So it's going to be interesting. You know, the pitching is going to be something to watch. And I know that the Brewers are loaded in the minor leagues. And last year, I think they used over 60 players. And you might see that again.
A lot of excitement about Jackson Churio. Tell me about what you've seen in him this spring.
Incredible confidence, incredible ability. He can hit, he can run, he can throw, he gets good jumps. You know, Pat Murphy has said that he's already told, you know, Jackson he's going to make the team, so he's on the team. Brewers have a lot of young outfielders, you know, Jackson is 20 years old, signed a long-term deal already, not even in one day in the big league, certainly deserved from what I've seen. I mean, he's going to be a good one for a long time. I think you're going to have to give him a little bit of a mulligan early in the year, you know, the four decks at in the big leagues and, you know, the pressure that's associated, you know, with that. You know, and Pat Murphy has said he'd like to see him improve his defense a little bit. So, you know, Arizona is not the easiest place to play outfield, you know, with the sun and, you know, the high sky and things like that. At times he has struggled with that. It's going to be a little bit easier, you know, in Milwaukee. So everybody's excited about Jackson Churio. He's got a lot of confidence. We've seen him. He had an 8-game hitting streak at some point. I mean, you can take that for what it's worth, but he's got confidence to be a very good big league player.
Last one for you. National League Central context is not the same as American League West context or American League East context. Where do you see the Brewers fitting in here with this division, which I think big picture, you've seen a lot of teams get better, especially the Pirates and the Reds. Where do you see the Brewers fitting in?
Well, and the Cubs are not going to be, you know, a pushover either. They got really good offense, you know, signing Cody Bellinger at the, late in the winter. But I think the Brewers, what's the over and under? I'm not a big gambling guy, but the over and under for the Brewers, I think, is 78.
Yes.
Somewhere
That's
around.
Exactly what it is.
Yeah, somewhere around 500 is a legitimate, goal for this team. Now, having said that, you just never know. You never know how the season is going to play out. Injuries play a big part, as you know, Buster, who wins divisions. So if the Brewers are able to stay healthy and these young kids, step up and they become really good players really quickly, guys like, Sal Frelick, who – the Brewers are planning on using over at third base from time to time this year to keep his bat in the lineup. So you would say that the Cubs, you would probably think that the Reds are top of the food chain in the Central, but who knows? Who thought the Cardinals were going to be in last place last year? So everybody's the same right now. Nobody's lost a single game until I guess that's not true over in Korea, right?
Right. Padres and Dodgers have lost a game and their pitching staffs are in shambles. You're exactly right.
Yeah. So I take that back. So there have been teams that have losses. So anyway, but it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, I think everybody is very excited about, what the Brewers have to offer with these young players. You got William Contreras, Silver Slugger guy. You got Rhys Hoskins, who's coming off injury from the Phillies. Willie Adames, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. So it'll be interesting to see, how that goes. And then Christian Yelich had a nice comeback season last year. So we're bullish. We're excited about the season.
All right, Bill. Thanks for your time. Thanks for doing this.
All right, Buster. Thanks. Anytime, man. Let me know.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter, producer for MLB.com, and I'm guessing, Sarah, you are really tired after getting up early in the day to watch the first two games of regular season because you are a night owl and these games are played very early East Coast time. How you feeling?
I'm feeling okay. So day one was actually easier. I went to bed pretty early, and even though I woke up, I was trying to sleep from, 9 p.m. until 3:30. I woke up in the middle of that, couldn't really go back to sleep. But day one, I was amped, I was good, I was so ready. Day two was a bit harder, still amped, still excited. But the post-game bodily reaction of I'm sleepy, but it's early, but it's late. And then dealing with that on day two, that was interesting, but it's all worth it for baseball.
Yeah, you were like a starting pitcher. You threw 120 pitches on day one, and they called you back to start game two, right? It's just not fair.
No, it's so much fun.
Yeah, exactly. But I suspect you could get a nap in sometime today. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 116.7. So Well, game one, not as many fireworks stat-wise or at all on the field as game two had, with much, much higher scoring. So in game two, we have Fernando Tatis Jr. ripping at 116.7 mile an hour single early in the game. And I was actually pretty shocked to see that was the hardest hit ball of his career. He hits the ball really hard. He had a few others in that 116 range. But it was one of those where the moment it was hit, you knew. There are certain bad balls where the moment I see him, I look to see what the stat cast was. And it was really cool to see that from him.
Number two.
Number two is four. So Jake Cronenworth, I mean, I love the way the baseball gods operate. Unfortunately, in game one, that ball went straight through the webbing of his glove and broken, leading to the go-ahead run to score for the Dodgers. You know, we have a fielder looking at the glove as if, what did you do? And actually did something, which is not how it usually goes. But in game two, he had a great game. Hit 4 RBI, hit 4 hits. His 4 RBI was his second most in the game since the start of last season, which is notable to me because he did not have the type of offensive game he would have wanted to have last year. And the 4 hits were tied for his most in any game. So, I mean, again, I say the baseball gods and no discredit to Cronenworth. He did it. But I love the way this game works. It gives and it takes away. He has that issue in game one. In game two, he has one of the best games of his career.
Number one.
Number one is one. So we have a new country that baseball has been playing in now. And it's always fun to update this. We finally got our first home run from Mookie Betts, who had 6 RBI, by the way, is most since 2017 in the game. But Mookie Betts, forever and always, has the official first major league home run in South Korea. So here are the first home runs in each country that baseball is playing regular season games in. And obviously for the U.S., we start with 1876. When the National League was founded, and it was Ross Barnes on May 2nd, 1876, that is my birthday, although I was not around to see that one, so I have another birthday fun fact. And then we have Canada, Mac Jones in 1969, Mexico with Steve Finley in 1996, Japan, Shane Andrews in 2000, wow. Australia, Scott Van Slyke in 2014, in the UK was Aaron Hicks in 2019, and now we have Mookie inaugurating South Korea in terms of long balls.
Man, I love that list. That is absolutely awesome. All right, going back to the Cronenworth play, that to me might be the best argument that I've ever seen, Sarah, for what we could term a team error, okay? I can't stand the idea that Jake Cronenworth was charged for an error when the ball broke through his glove. And all the folks who were saying, you know, in response to that, I sent out a tweet about that, and they were saying, well, he needs to check his equipment. He needs to have some. And I'm like, come on, really? You know, to me, that would be a classic case where you don't want to penalize the pitcher. I don't think he should get a hit just as, you know, a ball that you know, drops among 4 fielders. That should not be a hit. The pitcher shouldn't be penalized. I also don't think Jake Cronenworth should be penalized with an error there. What do you think?
I mean, I think we need a new term. Baseball has so many weird things that happen. We need a new term for, like, auditing. You know, ball off Jose Canseco's glove, Joe Adele giving Nick Solak the 4 base error when it kind of went off his glove. Maybe we need, like, hey, something weird happens. Just go find the video and believe us that way. Because, I mean, I agree. But, I mean, to Cronenworth's credit, he said post-game, I know the rules, that's an error. I get how it works and it is how it's always been, as you said in your tweet. But, I mean, this is why baseball is baseball. Because something like that happens, then we have to fit it into these boxes that have existed since 1876.
It's going to become my new mountain to stand on is the team error. I think it needs to happen. You have team rebounds in basketball. You know, there are other stats like that. And it bothered me that Jake Cronenworth, great pro, was charged with an error on that play. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 team preview, Colorado Rockies, machinations.
It was a slow winter for the Rockies. They added Cal Quantrill, who had an ERA over 5 last season for the Guardians, and Jacob Stallings was signed to help the catching. There was not a lot of turnover for a team that went 59 and 103 last season.
A guy to watch.
Nolan Jones seems to be a star on the rise. Acquired in a trade with the Cleveland Guardians, the former infielder moved to the outfield last year and thrived, mashing 20 homers and 22 doubles in 106 games while drawing 53 walks and stealing 20 bases. He had an on-base percentage of .389. And it would shock no one if he represents the Rockies at this year's All-Star Game.
Win projection.
There's no way to sugarcoat this. Colorado is the prohibitive frontrunner to finish last in the very competitive National League West again. Pecota pegs them at 57.4 wins. Sarah Lang says 57. Hembo says 63. I think he's nuts. I've got them at 56. Brian Spielborgs is an analyst on Colorado Rockies broadcast. Billy, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Buster. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Thanks for joining us. Look, you know, with the Rockies, it's all about development of their young players. So give me a name of a young player you're looking forward to seeing in 2024.
Well, I think last year it was a bit of a breakout for him and Nolan Jones. And I know, like, he's not a household name, but he's the one that I'm telling you right now is going to be an all-star. Part of the reason I'm kind of cherry picking a little bit is the Rockies have to have an all-star. But I also think he would legitimately be, by the end of this year, he's going to be a top five left fielder in the National League. I think he's really good. The skill set's really good. He's a former third baseman that the Guardians traded over for a shortstop that the Rockies had. And he's turned out to be a star. I mean, like the bat plays, he's a little bit Kyle Tucker like, where there's power, there's speed, there's really good defense. So like in a sense, the Rockies stumbled upon this player that has really high upside that most people just don't know. And they're like, oh, is he a Coors Field creation? No, he's not, you know, because the splits show you that he's just as productive on the road as he is at Coors Field. So that's a name that I think people are familiar with. But in the case of the national media, I don't think you really know who Nolan Jones is. And then going back, this was what was so wild about last year for Nolan. He was on the team for a week, didn't get in a bat. He didn't even play. And then he gets called back up, and it's in Arizona. CJ Krohn is dealing with a back issue, so he plays first base. He hadn't played first base. Makes an unbelievable diving play, gets a hit. The next day, Jurickson and Profar, I think it was like a Sunday getaway day, so Profar has a day off. And Profar at that moment was like the worst defensive run saved left fielder in baseball.
Right.
He was like by far
playing
the worst.
Playing in Colorado, by the way.
Yeah, and like a lot of those numbers are skewed. So do I think Jurickson and Profar is the worst left fielder in baseball last year? No. But he wasn't the best. So the numbers kind of like extrapolate really bad on a player when they're in Colorado. So the next day we're in Arizona. Nolan Jones makes this crazy catch in left field and hits a tank. And people were like, oh, dang. So here was somebody that wasn't even supposed to be playing, was called up for a week, never even took an at bat. And then all of a sudden you run into what could be an all-star and a top five player at the position. So that's kind of what the Rockies stumbled upon last year, which I think is really fun. If you're looking for another like deep dive, deep cut, and I know he's the top prospect for the Rockies in the franchise is Adell Almodor. This is the one that I want you to pay attention to because he's a second baseman. It's a switch hitter. Reminds me of Ozzie Albies. It's a high contact rate, low chase, which the Rockies have been dying for. And I think it puts Brendan Rodgers in a position where he's like, it's a trade candidate. Because here you have this player that like he has nothing left to prove in the minor league system and has this skill set that the Rockies are looking for. And I really do think he has a chance to be an impactful rookie for the Rockies. It's just now you have to figure out what do you do with your infield because it's crowded. So does that mean a McMahon? Does that mean a Brendan Rodgers? That's going to be the question mark over the course of this year for the Rockies is what happens the way this infield is going to shake out.
So Nolan is a great athlete. I mean, that just jumped out. We had him on Sunday Night Baseball late in the year. He has a lot of confidence. You know, he's got that personality that is well that he had. Why do you think he ascended in the way that he did last year? And what's next in his evolution? I guess the one part that you'd pick apart, you know, that would jump out would be, you know, a lot of walks or good walks. He had an on-base percentage near 400. He also had a number of strikeouts. I think it was like 130 in 106 games last year.
So great point. I think the observation, Nolan Jones, he wants to be great. It's not like he wants to be in the big leagues. He wants to be great in the big leagues. So there's a separator. You and I, we've been around this game long enough. I've had teammates that were happy to be big leaguers and then just went about their business. And then I had other teammates that wanted to be great. And what does that mean? It's paying attention to diets, paying attention to sleep habits, mental health, having a safety net of players that push you, working, you know, just trying to understand the nuance of the game to a level that most people don't. You know, I'll give you an example. Charlie Blackmon probably works as hard studying and doing all these things, even though he was originally a fourth outfielder. He was a fourth outfielder. Charlie Blackmon was not even an everyday player. He was going up and down to the minor leagues and then completely dedicated himself to the craft and turned himself into a great baseball player. Nolan has that mindset, and I think he has that desire. You know, he was a high school hockey player, so he's kind of got this this grit, little dirt in their teeth type stuff, which I think is necessary for a baseball player to have. So I think in the case of Nolan Jones, he's also tall. He's about 6'5". 6'5" hitters have a lot of holes in their game. It's the reality of being tall. It's not because he can't hit. It's a lot of plate to cover for a tall athlete. So I think there's always going to be strikeout in his game. I think the more he understands how teams are pitching to him, he'll make those adjustments. I'm not worried about Nolan at all. Even if he has a rough start, I'm not worried about Nolan Jones at all.
Last year, watching Brenton Doyle, man, you could tell he's one of the best defensive outfielders in baseball that most people don't know about. And what I heard was he's working on his swing. There are things that he really wanted to do in the offseason with his swing. And if he can make that work, boy, you know, you have yourself a player. Tell me how that's going.
I'm not worried about the swing change, to be honest, Buster. He's so good defensively. And, you know, I know from the Rockies internally, they're like, well, Spilly, you know, can you get him to hit 220? Can you get him to have an on-base percentage of you know, 320? Can you get him, you know, close? And I was like, why? Why does it matter so much what he does offensively when he is so elite defensively, saving, especially at Coors Field? He can play shallow, which means he's taken away singles. He's also taken away outs. That you'll see some center fielders that play so deep. There's some teams that come in, and I'll watch a center fielder go out there because I've watched as a broadcaster for 11 years, and then I played that outfield for 6 years myself. You have to play shallow. You have to have guys that can go get it. And in the case of Doyle, he never played football, but he looks like a wide receiver running go routes after the baseball. Like he just flies. It's like Randy Moss and Tom Brady back in 2006 when they're setting all these records. Like that's what Brenton Doyle looks like. And the second we saw him defensively at Coors Field, I was like, I don't care what he hits. You should not care at all what he hits, because if he's saving a pitching staff that is pitched to contact and it's a low velocity starting rotation with not a lot of strikeouts, you're going to need all the help you can get. So would you rather have somebody with a 220 batting average and a 320 on base percentage, but doesn't have the ability to cover as much ground? Or would you rather have somebody like Brenton Doyle, where he's going to cover everything and whatever you get from him offensively, you take it. He has improved. He has improved, but I don't care. Like, I don't care that he doesn't have to be an elite hitter for me because he is so elite on the defensive side.
It's kind of the way Dusty Baker viewed Martin Maldonado, right? Where he didn't care. He was like, the pitchers have trust in this guy and they have faith in him. Omar Vizquel, I think early in his career, was someone who was so good defensively that they figured that they would just live with that. Who are the arms? Obviously, the big question for the Rockies every year is going to be about depth in the pitching staff. Arms that have jumped out at you this spring.
I mean, that's going to be the challenge for the Rockies is, you know, make sure that they have enough pitching depth to withstand the season. I mean, that's the problem where unless you've lived it, you don't really understand. Just you're going to lay an egg in Colorado more than any other field because of the size of it. There was in the bullpen for years, all these different names of famous Rockies relievers in the home bullpen. And in it, it would have like, it would say like Houston Street versus LA, one inning, six runs, eight hits, you know, like it would just be this line from the bullpen of how they just got, you know, how they got destroyed. And it wasn't just like bad play, right? It was every player. It was closers. It was all stars. Just to remind you, it was almost a badge of honor to pitch in a place where, like, offensively, if it gets hot, if an outfielder doesn't catch a ball, you're having to get extra outs. Extra outs at the major league level means extra runs. So I think that's what's so cool about this. And in the case of the Rockies, some arms that I like, I know he got sent down to the minor leagues, but Jaden Hill is somebody to pay attention to. Good arm, came from LSU, was coming back from Tommy John. I like him a lot. I also think, you know, the Jalen Beeks trade with Tampa is kind of interesting. See if he can catch some Tampa Bay Rays stuff in a bottle. And then Justin Lawrence throws from this really different arm angle. It's basically a low three-quarter slot. It's 100 miles an hour with a sweeper off of it. You know, he's probably going to begin the year as a closer. I'd pay attention to Tyler Kinley again if you're looking for some names that might be moved at trade deadline. You know, I would throw McMahon, Kinley, Brendan Rodgers. I don't know if there's any interest in the rest of the rotation, starting rotation, but that's what I kind of see with the Rockies and their pitching staff.
You know, it's interesting. I've you know, always have had so many conversations through the years with folks like Dan O'Dowd about, okay, what's it going to take to find a way to win in that ballpark? And you know, because the biggest thing is the emotional and mental challenge for pitchers who work there. You can have a really good day and it will never and won't reflect in your pitching line. And there are probably a lot of days like that to the degree that it wears on guys. Among the pitchers you have seen, you know, guys you played with, who in your mind is the ultimate Rockies plow horse? Who are like, people, if you get a pitching staff of guys who have that mindset, that's the guy.
I'm partial. I mean, I've had some really great teammates, like from Jeff Francis to Aaron Cook to Jason Marquis, Josh Fogg. I mean, like I've seen some really good pitchers that were all-stars. Brian Fuentes, Tito Fuentes, you know, Houston Street is another good one. Matt Belisle. But I think the one, and it's kind of crazy to say it, Ubaldo Jimenez. Ubaldo was from, you know, is it Dominican? I played with him from the very beginning. The stuff was electric, but he used to run and work out like hard all the time because he wanted his body to be trained and acclimated to altitude so he can withstand it. I mean, this guy was taking the rock and throwing 125 pitches at Coors Field in 2010, the first half of the season for Ubaldo Jimenez. If he was playing for the Yankees or the Dodgers, like people would be screaming, this is the greatest first half a pitcher's ever had. He played for Colorado, started an all-star game, nobody cares. Ubaldo's mentality there was to outwork you. And it's kind of weird to say it when it comes to it from a pitcher standpoint, because he wanted that mental edge because he knew the starter on the other side was like, I don't want to throw a pitch up because it's going to get blasted. Ubaldo didn't care. So I think that's the mentality you have to have, but mentality only goes so far, Buster.
Yeah.
because Ubaldo had the stuff that went with it. So I sometimes cringe when people tell me like, oh, you got to have like this mental fortitude and this attitude to pitch there. And like, whatever you have, you can make it work. No, that's not true. It's not true. Like, you have to be a strike thrower. You have to pound the strike zone and you have to trust your stuff. And if your stuff is short, it's going to be short at Coors Field, in New York, in Boston, regardless of your attitude. So I think it's more stuff than attitude at altitude. So it's just, I think you have to have players that have the mindset that they're going to outwork the other side and then just really have stuff that can pitch at that level.
All right. That's a great answer. I love that. All right, Spilly, thanks for doing this.
You got it, Buster, anytime.
Bleacher Tweets.
Hello, hello, Buster. I have another round of Bleacher Tweets. I have two for you today. Here's the first one.
Hey, Buster, this is Brad Leon from Chattanooga. Calling to see what the current status is of the electronic strike zone. It's become increasingly frustrating for fans to watch inaccuracies throughout the game, and it seems like such an easy fix. I wonder what the current status is. Thank you very much.
So I have not specifically asked about that in the last couple of weeks, but I will tell you that there has been a lot of support for a challenge system of some kind, not to a pure 100% use of an electronic strike zone, but more giving hitters, pitchers, catchers, the ability to, you know, have a limited number of challenges per game, the way that they have in the minor leagues. And I think in one of the breakout games, I remember seeing that challenge system used, and I think it's going to be something that, baseball wants, because if they go to a pure challenge system, that would make a lot of umpires obsolete. And I don't think that Major League Baseball or the umpires union would be in favor of that.
Okay. Here's the next one.
Hey, Buster, this is Joe from Colorado. I'm calling in as a response to Landon from Atlanta's question about the diminishing value of veterans on the trade market. I'm kind of wondering where you think the market might actually be heading. Could we get to a point where veterans are just not traded for prospects as they approach free agency?
No, I think there'll always be a market for the players. The question is, would the return be worth it? And there were instances last summer, and I'm trying to remember them specifically, where I remember talking to executives after the trade deadline, and they had marketable veterans. And I was like, hey, how come you didn't trade so-and-so? And they're like, nah, the return's not worth it. You might as well keep the guy on the team through the end of the year because you're not getting the number one prospect anymore for a guy who's about ready to be a free agent. Let's use Willie Adames of the Brewers, for example. If he's put out there, I don't think there's any way the Brewers are going to get like a number one prospect for him. They might not get a number two or number three. It might be like a number five type prospect. In the current market, that's probably a pretty good return.
Thanks to everyone for reaching out. If you would like to ask a question, call us at 406-404-8460 or tweet us.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Adrian. Adrian, thanks for getting up early. It's a long day with these games in Korea, right? Where we're like on hold waiting for Eduardo to finish the broadcast and we get all these tapings in the afternoon.
It's no problem, Buster. It was an exciting show today.
All right. My thanks to Tisha and to Eduardo and to Sarah and to Spilly and to Bill. I'm trying to remember all of them. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.